Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Bramante Bryant, in for Harold Fisher. Well, yesterday, Maryland Governor Larry Hogan announced that the state of Maryland will move into phase three of reopening. That will include churches, entertainment venues, movie theaters, restaurants, etc. Well, our guest tonight has been pretty vocal on the safety of residents in Montgomery County. And part of his job, he's been involved with police reform, education, and other issues pertinent to Montgomery County. Tonight, we sit down and have a conversation with County Executive Mark Elrich, and we want to hear from you as well. Want you to be part of the conversation. The phone lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Again, our guest tonight, County Executive for Montgomery County, Mark Elrich. County Executive Elrich, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Hope you're doing okay.
I'm doing fine. Hope you are doing well also. And when we talk about well, obviously we talk about today, these days, the coronavirus. And you came out today. We actually ran a soundbite from you earlier, and you announced that the county would not be moving out of phase two effective Friday. Now, the governor said, listen, counties now have the leeway to move into phase three. The metrics are showing that we can do that. But Montgomery County and you have decided not to take that step. Can you talk about why you've come to that decision to hold fort on phase two?
Yeah, we don't think the metrics show anything like that. I remind people, first of all, that when we largely shut down the county, our caseload was far lower than it is today. And when we closed schools, we were averaging, a handful of cases a day in Montgomery County. So the idea that we're better or back, back to the point where we should just start opening things again very liberally, I don't believe that's true. We had for a while, our cases had been going down. At one point, Prince George's County and us combined for well over half the cases in the state of Maryland. Now that dubious distinction is in the Baltimore metropolitan area, and our numbers have decreased, but Prince George's County and us have taken a more cautious role. We've opened less. We've been more careful about what we open and what our rules are. And we think that the reason, when people like the governor and others say, look at your numbers are getting better. The only reason our numbers are better are because of what we did. The virus didn't go away making our numbers better. We did the one thing that we know controls the spread of the virus is we've limited as much as possible interactions between people. That's how the virus spreads. And so the fact that our numbers may be better than some places doesn't mean that they're good enough to open as much as the governor wants to open. And when he talks about New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut, their numbers are not only lower than Montgomery County's numbers, they're far lower than the state's numbers. So his comparison is those jurisdictions. I'd love to have their numbers. I'd make the same decisions they're making if I had their numbers. But we're not there yet. So we're going to continue to be careful. We will do some things. I believe that they could have allowed some live entertainment in the restaurants. To be frank with you, from the very beginning when they said they were going to allow unlimited numbers of people to get together, but said you couldn't have an audience for a band, it was like saying if you had 250 people in a park, they could be there, but if a band showed up, they all had to leave. That didn't make any sense. So we've been asking the state to clarify its rule. He's clarified it even more today. I wrote him a letter last week or 2 weeks ago, again, asking them to allow some entertainment. So it's not like we're opposed to doing anything. And we're probably going to limit, continue our limit of 50 people and say that you can't dance, you can't stand up in front of the stage, but you can continue to sit in your seat and continue to enjoy the entertainment. So we're going to, change some things, and we're going to see about some of the other stuff he recommended and see what makes sense. But I don't make any decisions without consulting my my chief health officer, Dr. Travis Gales, and Dr. Earl Stoddard in our the Homeland Security, the other office we have, the emergency management. So that's where I am. I'm being careful.
So to be very clear, when Governor Hogan says the state metrics meet the level where the state can reopen, if I hear you correctly, what you're saying is overall those state metrics might be pertinent to the state, but in particular to Montgomery County, those numbers don't match up. Would I be understanding you correctly?
You know, actually, I would go further. I'd say they're pertinent to some counties in the state. There are some counties that have very, very low incidences of the virus and very few cases per 100,000.
Mm-hmm.
There are other counties that have almost 15 cases per 100,000. And you know, the original guidance that came at the CDC, and their cutoff point was more like 10 cases per 100,000 from moderate opening. So part of the state, you can do more. In parts of the state, you can do less. We're kind of in the middle. We can do more than we're doing now. We will look to do a few more things than we're doing now, but we're not prepared to go as far as the governor wants to go. And the places, like I said, the places that he points to and says, look at what they're doing, we should do that, their numbers are better than his numbers in any county in Maryland.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Our guest tonight, the executive for Montgomery County, Mark Elrich. We'd love to hear your questions, your comments for the executive. This is your chance to do it. The phone lines are open. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Executive Elrich, you, I'm assuming, know that there has been even pushback within your county among residents and some county leaders that maybe you are being too cautious. What are your reactions to that?
I'm sorry they feel that way, but, you know, some of these people don't believe in the virus. And a lot of them tell me, you know, how great our numbers are. And we had this long talk in our press conference today. The only reason the numbers are what they are is because of what we did. If we had opened the way the governor had proposed to open earlier, there's no way our numbers would be this way. Look what happened in Ocean City.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have high prevalence of this until the governor made a decision to let them open up. They had recommendations. Masks were recommended. They weren't required. And Ocean City and that county have very high rates of infection now. So, yeah, I think people need to think not about the number, but if they want to, you know, if they're going to dwell on the number, dwell on how you got that number.
Mm-hmm.
And if I don't do what I did to get that number, then we wouldn't have that number and we wouldn't be able to keep that number. And I know, look, this is frustrating. I mean, you know, my misery is trivial, but, you know, for me, I'm a big music fan. And, you know, it's not unusual for me to go see a few concerts a month. I haven't been to a concert. I've got tickets that are, you know, rendered worthless. I miss this, but I would rather miss it than have policies that put other people at risk. And all of us, you know, people are missing their families. They're missing their friends. They're missing a normal social life. My own daughter, you know, is very careful about who comes in her house. She's a small pot of people. Everybody is doing things they don't want to do, but most of us are doing it knowing that if we all keep doing it, we have the best chance of getting out of this sooner with the least amount of casualties.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're speaking tonight to Montgomery County Executive Mark Elrich. We're talking about the coronavirus, and we'll hit on many other issues that are happening in the county and around the state that may affect the county as well. So we'd like to hear from you, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. County Executive Elrich, if you had a message, and I'm sure you've probably already talked to the governor about this, how would you suggest his approach should be statewide? Because it sounds as if you're saying, listen, maybe the governor shouldn't just make a sort of blanket statement of saying the state is open, but say, listen, if your numbers are here per county, then you can decide to open. I mean, he ultimately knows that the county executives have the final say. But do you believe that the way he gives a state sort of overview saying the state can reopen is giving sort of a false sense of security to folks throughout the state in different jurisdictions?
I think it raises false expectations. I mean, it's nice that he gives us the leeway, but it would be good if he acknowledged the differences between one county and another.
Mm-hmm.
And this goes back to one of, you know, I'll be honest about this. I thought he was doing a great job in the beginning. I thought he was ahead of, you know, most governors. He was certainly ahead of most Republican governors and seemed really to be focused on, you know, being willing to pay the price of locking stuff down if it meant that we were going to maximize the health outcomes. I think that over time, the economics has maybe become a bigger worry than the health outcomes. And what he's done is made it hard for us, because it's one thing to say that the counties can make your own decision. It would be really helpful if there was an asterisk after that saying, I recognize that conditions in some counties don't warrant this yet. And it would be good if there were metrics that were universally accepted, or at least more universally accepted, so you could say if you were at this point, you can do this. Because there are counties that aren't at the point that the CDC originally said you should be before you do the kind of things the governor is talking about. Now, the CDC has obviously gone off the rails. The President of the United States is interfering with the CDC. I believe some of the President's decisions are outright dangerous and ill-intentioned, to say the least.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Phone lines are open. Let's go to those phone lines. Sheba is calling from Bowie. Go right ahead, Sheba, with your question or comment.
Yes, hi. I agree with Elwich about the not ready yet. I mean, we still got schools. People are going into schools with the virus, and, you know, people are catching it.
Oh, thank you so much, Sheba. So So there you go. You got a supporter there, County Executive Elrich. But let me ask you this. If not now, what's your sense of when you believe the county may be open? Now, I know if we just deal with numbers, you'll say, hey, well, listen, when the metrics, you know, match up that we think are coinciding with the safe reopening of the county, we'll do it. But just in general, a time frame, do you have a sense of when you think it may happen?
So, you know, I'll say this is a few weeks ago, our cases had finally come down to about 45 to 55 a day. And that's down from 200 or more a day. And we'd actually watched a pretty steady progression, you know, 7 days over 7 days. We kept seeing that number go down. And I thought, okay, 45 is great. Next stop, 40. Next stop, 35. Well, next stop turned out to be 55, and then 60, and then 70. So after getting things down and coinciding with when more things in the state got opened up, like Ocean City, our cases started going up. And I got to say, there's a part of me that thinks, because I know people in Montgomery County, like every place else, are going to Ocean City, that Ocean City turned out to be a place where people caught COVID. You can see it in Wycombe, not in Worcester County's numbers and Ocean City's numbers. And I'm afraid that, you know, we may be suffering from what happens in other jurisdictions. We're not an island. And so, and Travis and I talked about this today. We don't want to focus on a number, because I could get that number and then a week later discover I don't have that number anymore. We want to sustain something for about 2 weeks. If we could get down to, you know, 20, maybe 25 cases a week, and I'm speaking out of turn because I haven't cleared that number with Travis, but if our numbers were down in that area, we would be talking about a somewhat different situation, particularly if we held those numbers for 2 weeks. But I'm more concerned about getting to a lower number and being able to hold it. When I'm getting right now, an average of 70, yesterday was 87. The day before was 97. You get that kind of variability. That means that, you know, 87 people got infected a few days ago. 97 people got infected a few days ago. That means there are people still passing this and spreading it in the community. And so even though we're seeing these steady numbers, they're not going down the way we want them to go down. So that's our drive, is to get those numbers down. And if we get to the point, if I start to look like New York and New Jersey, we'll start acting like New York and New Jersey.
All right. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's go back to the phone lines and go to, let's see, go to Journey. Go to David calling from Montgomery County. Go right ahead, David.
Yeah, just out of curiosity, is there any kind of protocol we can follow to get better metrics or better results by county? Is there any kind of infrastructure we already have existing? For example, the waste stream collection, that would be something we all share critically in common and affects all of us. And then something like that would maybe be a template to how to reopen counties.
So, look, I think, you know, the first thing you do, you know that the virus is transmitted by contact. So the things that we've done have been basically to minimize contact. The constant emphasis on 6 feet and a mask, I think, has played an important role in minimizing the contact people have. The big thing is for us to be able to get rapid tests, which are on the horizon. I don't know whether they're a month away or 2 months away, but these are the tests that a person can take, and they can stand there and within, you know, a few minutes, they'll know whether they're positive. And if we get a positive case, what we want to do is have our contact tracers in our testing center. So if a person comes in, takes the test, it turns out to be positive, we immediately put them in touch with a contact tracer who figures out, okay, where have you been and who you had close association with, so we can get to those people quickly. Up until a few days ago, maybe a week or so ago, our typical response times and tests was anywhere from 4 days to 7 days or longer. That was typical. Well, if it takes you that long to figure out who's positive, and you've got people walking around positive not knowing it, then they're spreading that whole time. And so the sooner we know who's positive and the sooner we start contact tracing and the more we have available these very inexpensive and quick tests, the better the chance we have of controlling this. So I'm a believer that, you know, that just there are some additional tools. We need better information from our contact tracing. Right now, the contact tracing the state is doing is not providing all the answers to the questions that we need. And I'm not the only person who feels this way. All of the major counties, large county executives wrote to governor's staff saying we need more cooperation on the information we're getting from contact tracing. I need better information on racial data to understand who exactly is getting affected, because we've struggled with lots of unknowns in our data, more unknowns than we think we should have. So I need more information, but I think we've got the tools, and if we stick with our policies, I think a combination of quicker testing, quicker turnaround, and maintaining limits on contact, it will actually get where we need to be.
Thank you so much, David, for your question. County Executive Elrich, before we jump over to the other side and take a break, you had mentioned testing, and the county had some issues with that you had to terminate your contract with a Rockville-based lab. Some folks had to go back in and be retested because those tests weren't as accurate. And I want to have you talk a little bit about that when we come back. From break. Journey, if you're on the line, stay right there. The phone lines are still open. We want to hear from you. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Our guest tonight, the county executive for Montgomery County, Mark Elrich. So we're going to take a break. We're going to come right back. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. The original Quiet Storm with John Mons is next. 96.3 WHUR. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. This is the Insight segment. Tonight, our guest is the county executive from Montgomery County, Maryland, Mr. Mark Elrich. And we are talking tonight, obviously, heavy on COVID-19, especially with the state's governor announcing that the state can move into phase three, and that will be effective Friday at 5 p.m. But County Executive Elrich has said Montgomery County, the state's largest jurisdiction, will not be moving out of phase two into phase three. For now, the numbers, he says, do not warrant making that move to phase three. So he is talking about that and more tonight. Phone lines are open. Your questions or comments, the county executive is here. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Executive Elrich, when we went to break, we were talking about the lab, the Rockville-based lab that the county had to let go because the testing did not appear to be accurate and folks had to retest. What you believe did that do, and if it did, any in terms of the confidence that residents would have in the testing?
Well, look, I mean, we were very forthright about what happened. I will say, I mean, it's the lab had an FDA authorization, and there's a dispute between the lab and the approval that they got from the FDA and another agency over whether what was good enough for the FDA was a good enough criteria for this other agency. And they came in and they determined they didn't have adequate evidence to back up or to assure the other agency that the tests were being handled safely. We don't know whether the tests were accurate or inaccurate, but in an abundance of caution, you know, the recommendation was to go and be retested if you were tested in the last couple of weeks. The company has performed the tests that the federal agency asked for and the state asked for. They're waiting for a response from the state. For our part, the state's never told us exactly why they closed it down and what the issues were. So, you know, we don't have a balanced story about this. We just know that they said we're closing it down until we decide they can open back up. So we're waiting to see what happens with the lab. We're waiting what the state says about the results they've produced, what the implications are for the tests that were taken. In the meantime, people who wanted to get retested are getting retested. I'm not a scientist. I don't have any way of evaluating the validity or non-validity of tests. So we're in a waiting game. And the government has been not forthcoming with us at all, and I wish they had been, because we're the ones that have to explain this to people. And I at least would have liked to have known a little bit better what people should know. And if this company is, you know, gets authorization to test again, why they made a decision to allow them to test again so people have confidence. The confidence issue is a big deal. But I will say, you know, the county step was able to arrange for additional testing. The state has given us 5,000 tests a week that we can use for 4 weeks. We're already lining up alternative suppliers, including possibly an extended contract with the supplier that the state hooked us up with. And we're continuing to talk with people about more testing, and particularly the rapid tests and when they might become available. So we've been, you know, pushing really hard on this from the beginning. When we went into a contract with this company, we had sought out other companies. I had looked into buying test kits from China and Korea. We ran into the same problem the governor did. We could find kits without reagents. We could find kits without swabs. We could find kits with no machines to run the tests on to see what the results would be. So, you know, when we finally found a company that had capacity and was willing to do high-volume testing, that was what was important to us, because nobody back then was able to do high volume testing, and that's what we were trying to reach for.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. The phone number to speak with County Executive for Montgomery County, Mark Elrich. He is our guest tonight on Insight. Let's go back to the phone lines, and Journey is calling from Virginia. Go right ahead, Journey.
Hello. Hello, Mr. Ryan. Hello, Dr. Elrich. It's so wonderful to have such a, you know, wonderful resources on the show. My name is Journey. I'm 20 years old. I live in VA County. I am a Black woman. I say that proudly. I want you guys to understand that being amongst and in this generation, the Generation X, the young people, they have not let up with their partying, with their traveling, with any of it. And not because we're ignorant or because we don't want to listen to authority. It's because the authority and the leadership has absolutely no credibility and does not listen to healthcare professionals like yourself. So for us to come back and kind of tame and reconstruct our lifestyles for people who do not even know how to run our country, it's kind of like a double negative. I look at my peers who like to party and continue to go out and, you know, not wear masks, and I can't truly blame them because we have no grasp on this virus, this disease, personally, and that's how I feel.
Well, Crystal, let me ask you this. It sounds like you're talking specifically, Journey, specifically about the president, but you live, I'm assuming, in Virginia, and so are you not particularly looking at your individual leaders in the state, in your county? Because it sounds like you're putting the weight on the president, and therefore, well, if he isn't being straight with you, why do you have to listen to anyone else? Am I sort of reading that correctly?
I wouldn't say technically the president. I would say leadership in general.
You have no trust in the leadership.
I don't have, no, not personally myself, but I have heard and I've talked to and I've spoke with my peers and people mm-hmm. of my age and my generation, mm-hmm. and we as a collective seem to have no trust in leadership and higher government when it comes to this virus and the protocols in which we should be following.
Okay.
Because you look on TV
mm-hmm.
and you watch the news, and it's a new situation each day. Not only is it that, we also make up the majority of our labor and workforce. There's are the politicians clocking in to go back to waitressing and waiting tables or working in retail? No. At the end of the day, people who have particularly money in this situation who are a little well off, so it's not necessarily, you know, us right now. If you're like me, you're a college student, you're working, yada, yada, yada. They don't even have the ability to really take that time into consideration and say, oh, I can quarantine. Not only that, but also the fact that our leadership, again, have really not been able to really get a hold on it. Because truly, if we were looking at this virus, that it was such a deadly force that was going to really put a dent on our economy, we would have taken much more heavier precautionary measures much earlier, and the city and the state and the counties would already be open because we would be following those measures.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much, Crystal. I want to let the county executive maybe sort of comment on that. She's a Generation Xer. County exec, and she says, we don't trust the government. Now, listen, one side of me can say, well, when you're 20, you tend to, you know, push back on authority anyway, because you're sort of kind of, you know, developing your own thinking and what you think of things. So you tend to be suspicious of authority. But is there some weight to what she has to say, Journey?
So, I mean, look, first of all, I'm not a Gen Xer anymore. I grew up in the 60s, but mm-hmm. I will say, you know, when I was growing up, the saying was, don't trust anyone over 30.
Right.
You know, basically, you know, these folks are, you know, on a different planet. You would be comforted or discomforted to know that if you go to Ocean City, you'll see people of all ages totally disregarding safety precautions. It doesn't matter whether they're, you know, older men and women in bars, or whether it's younger people hanging out around the bars, there's mass ignoring of what the rules are. I do think young people, you know, were really dealt some serious misinformation and a bad hand in this, because in the beginning, people kept saying that this doesn't affect young people. They don't get sick. You know, they carry it, but they're not going to die. They're not going to get sick. So now it turns out it's not exactly true. They about 20% of our cases now are in people under 20. So that's a change from the beginning. They are getting sick. People do die. And, you know, the other thing that didn't get talked about was if you get COVID, it's not just you either die or you get better. Some people suffer long-lasting health impacts, infections and changes in, you know, their heart and their lungs and things that have long-term effects on their health. They'll live, but they'll live possibly with impairments for a long time. So it's an issue. But trusting, you know, we told them they were okay and that we didn't have to worry about them. Now it turns out all the studies are saying we really have to worry about kids, even the littlest kids. But if you want to be really cynical, you just look at what the president did. over the last, you know, week or so. And to point these things out because I think it's important. He's appointed somebody in his inner circle to advise him on Corona who doesn't believe in the work that Dr. Fauci and others do and believes in herd immunity. Herd immunity means that if enough people get sick in the herd, then they develop antibodies and then the virus isn't able to spread. Mm-hmm. And the only thing that's wrong with this notion about developing herd immunity, because it sounds so painless, is that before the herd gets immune, the herd has to get sick. And then a bunch of people die because they got sick. And then the survivors may have antibodies. Mm-hmm. But it's not a healthy way to go about defeating a disease, seeing how many sick people you can get. So then you look at what the president has done next. First, he says that if you're asymptomatic, you shouldn't be tested. This is craziness because we know undisputably that people who are asymptomatic spread the disease. That's not a question mark. That is a fact. And they spread the disease and they can infect other people. So that's one thing he wants to do that will ensure that more people go around untested until they get sick. In the meantime, they will have been spreading it. Then he wants to force all the kids back into school. So knowing that young kids and teenagers can carry the disease, knowing that they may tend to be more asymptomatic if they don't get as sick, and there are reasons why they may not get as sick, they still carry the virus, they still shed the virus, and if they bring it to school and they spread it in school, they will bring it back to their homes, and they'll spread it into the neighborhoods. So if you wanted to infect the population, send your kids to school, don't test for asymptomatic people, and then Trump tops it off yesterday by saying that the Federal Emergency Management Agency will not reimburse school systems for masks for children, which is going to put an enormous cost burden on school systems if they're able to bear it. So they're basically saying, we don't believe that masks are essential, and so we're not going to reimburse you for it. So not only do they want the kids to go back to school and run the risk of getting more infection, but a simple little thing like a mask, which should actually help control the spread of it, even with children, they don't want to fund that either. And I put all that together, and I'm looking at this and saying this is a perfect prescription for how you infect the herd. And you don't have to say it in one sentence, in one paragraph, and say, this is my plan. All you've got to do is a series of these things in short order, and the plan looks pretty obvious to me.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're speaking tonight with County Executive Mark Elrich, the head of Montgomery County in Maryland. The phone lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's go back to the phone lines. Crystal is calling from Silver Spring. Go right ahead, Crystal.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I want to give a great applause and a thank you to Executive Elrich. I believe that we are so lucky in Montgomery County. I heard your last caller speaking of not trusting government. Well, I am so happy to be in a county that has you for a county executive. I believe you've had such a rational approach. You're informed and you are unwavered by the pressure, which I know must be enormous. I've seen some of the protesters. Yeah, so I thank you. I have a situation where I live with a immune compromised mother. She's over 70. She has multiple sclerosis. And I feel that when a lot of the information comes out, a lot of people, the approach has been very simplistic, even with the schools. Well, kids don't get it. All the focus has been on children don't get it as bad. But like you know, so many people live with people that they have to have consideration for. And therefore, we need an approach that takes all of that into consideration. Initially, I think that's part of, in my opinion, part of the problem. When things first came out, we tried to put it in a nice little box, or the president did, you know, where if you're in this group, then you have to worry. If you're not in this group, and I think that took us down a slippery slope. So I think children and teenagers and people felt, hey, I'm young, so I don't have to worry. And then other people felt, I'm not a minority, they're getting it worse, I don't have to worry. And the reality is, we don't know who's going to come down with the virus, and you don't know how you're going to fare with it. That's a humongous unknown. So I'm unemployed and, struggling at the time. Hopefully get something where I can work remote. But nonetheless, I have to take into consideration other people. So it's been difficult, but I thank you. I mean, I really give you a sincere, have all my gratitude and stay the course. We're lucky to have you in Montgomery County.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Crystal, for your call, for your comments, and best of luck on your work search. Always good to have some income, and that's a difficult situation right now with COVID-19. Mark Elrich is our guest. He is the county executive from Montgomery County. When we come back, we'll hit a couple more topics with the county executive, voter turnout, what that means during COVID-19, new electric buses that are coming into the county. We'll talk to the county executive about that. And the phone lines are still open, 202-319-7810. This is the Insight segment. We'll be right back after this timeout. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Bramante Bryant, in for Harold Fisher. This is the Insight segment. Tonight, our guest is Mark Elrich. He is the county executive for Montgomery County. Phone lines are still open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Executive Elrich, let's talk a little bit about the election. We're now down to about 2 months to go, and we know COVID-19 is affecting, everything in our lives, and it's going to affect the election and voter turnout, I assume. What are your thoughts in terms of in the county and how you're planning to handle COVID-19 and trying to get voters to actually come out, whether it's to the polls or mailing absentee or mail-in ballots?
So we've encouraged people to apply for mail-in ballots because those ballots are the same as the actual ballot that a person votes on. And if you mail it back, they can be fed into machines and processed reasonably quickly. If you opt for the email ballot, they have to be hand transcribed from the email into the proper ballot form, which means you have to have two people witnessing that the transcription is accurate. And then only after they're transferred can you then run the finished ballots. So if we have thousands and thousands of email ballots, it's going to take a while to get those ballots transcribed and counted. We also have, we're going to be standing up 40 election sites around the county. You don't have to, in fact, a lot of them won't be where you normally vote. So you can go to any election site, regardless of where you live in the county. You'll get a ballot that's proper for you. So this is going to be, you don't have to only go to the one that used to be in your neighborhood. If you took a mail-in ballot, there are going to be drop boxes available. So you can just take your ballot to a drop box and drop the mail ballot off over there. We're doing everything we can to encourage people to vote and to make it as easy as possible to vote. We wish it could have been made easier. We thought there were other ways we could have done a better job, but the state made the decisions that it made, and we're going to live with it. But it's absolutely critical for people to vote. And I'll shamelessly also plug the sentence because the census, because the federal government cut a month off the time that we were going to count people for the census.
Mm-hmm.
We need people to help us get the census done in this last month of counting. So if you go to the county website, you can find a place where you could, volunteer and get more information about the census. And if you're listening and you haven't filled your census form in, please do. It affects proportional representation, how many seats we get in the state legislature. It could draw congressional boundaries differently. It affects distributions of state and federal money to local jurisdictions based on population. We need everybody counted.
And that's for all of our listeners, not just those of you in Montgomery County.
Yes.
As the county executive says, it doesn't take you very long. You can do it online. I know I did mine, and it took me less time than I actually thought it would take. County Executive Elrich, let's talk a little bit about, it's hard to get away from COVID-19. As I said, it really is affecting everything, and I'm sure you see that in many of the decisions that you have to make, how it's affecting specific parts of your community. We know that COVID-19 really is hitting communities of color very hard, especially Latino and Black families. Talk a little bit about your efforts in the county in regards to Latino and African-American families during this pandemic.
Well, it's been really frustrating because there, we start out at, two communities because of issues around income and access to health care, not to mention particularly in the African-American community, centuries of discrimination and learned avoidance of the system in some ways, that it's really, really put a lot of stress on people. And if people get sick, a lot of them come in, are experiencing pre-existing conditions. It has really exposed the weaknesses in the healthcare system. I'm a big believer in single payer. I'd be happy with any form that actually got us to universal health coverage, where a person went to a doctor because they knew they needed to go to a doctor and never had to look at their bank account and decide whether they could afford to go to the doctor or if they had to make choices between medicine and food or rent. But these communities, these are real choices. And, the Hispanic communities especially suffered because of their immigration status. They weren't insured. They weren't covered by any aspect of the Affordable Care Act. And they don't have jobs and they don't get any of the income protection. So while the federal government did a good job with bumping up the unemployment benefits for a period of time, which has now ended, it was of no avail to the immigrant community if you weren't a U.S. citizen. And so we've got families that have had no source of income. And then because of, because of the historical, racism that, has kept people, without the educational opportunities that others have, we have a large portion of this community working in what people call essential work. And I always find that ironic because these are some of the worst paid jobs we have, but they're essential. And so you ask a person to go to work and to take a risk, and then you pay them as if you were disposable, not essential. And so this, this is one of the ironies. And I also think one of the fundamental injustices that's being exposed is people who are so important that you can't have them working are the people you can't afford to pay well enough or provide health care enough to, so that they can be as safe as everybody else is. We're working with the Latino Health Initiative and the African American Health Program. We are standing up and using them to stand up resources in their communities. We are trying new things. We're looking at hubs out in the community so that people don't have to come to a central government office in Rockville for social services. We're standing up hubs and putting people in hubs who can talk to people about other needs they might have besides getting a test. So we're learning and we're making changes as we go through this process to make sure that we do a better job of reaching out into the community. We, started out with a communications system that was, I would say, heavily Anglo-oriented and didn't have tentacles or, easy reach into communities of color, and we're working to address that. So it's a learning experience, but you really get to see the disparities close up, and they're ugly, and they're everything you would imagine them to be.
He is Mark Elrich. He is the county executive for Montgomery County. It is the largest jurisdiction in the state of Maryland. And he has announced that Montgomery County will not be moving into phase three, though Governor Larry Hogan has made the announcement that local jurisdictions can move into phase three. He made that announcement yesterday, but County Executive Elrich says Montgomery County is not ready yet, and he is more willing to be safe than sorry. County Executive Elrich, we thank you so much for discussing issues that are pertinent to Montgomery County and obviously pertinent to many citizens throughout the state. and the nation, obviously. We thank you so much for your time. We always enjoy having you on the show.
Yeah, thank you very much.
That's the Daily Drum on HRR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. For this Wednesday, September 2nd, I'm Bramante Bryant, in for Harold Fisher. Have a great night.